Okay, welcome everybody to another episode of Forever Bristol City podcast. It is being recorded the morning after the night before. We saw City enter the second round of the Caribou Cup, courtesy of an emphatic 5-1 victory over League One Oxford United. It was a victory, though, that many City fans going home maybe not feeling as joyous as they might otherwise have done, because the news broke before the game that Alex Scott is or was down in Bournemouth having a medical, leading to a transfer to the Premier League club. Now, we don't know if the paper's been signed yet, whether he got through the medical at the time of reporting this, but in his post-match interview on Radio Bristol, Nigel Pearson didn't seem to know too much about it, and was a little bit terse in his response. But I say, we'll focus on the game and then we'll talk about the implications of Alex Scott moving. I'm delighted to say, as usual contributors, I've got Ian Gay and Neil Sutton. Morning, gents. I guess it's nice to be in the second round of the Caribou Cup and a home draw against QPR or Norwich. More than likely to be Norwich, the way Gareth Ainsworth QPR is playing. But a home draw, Ian, that's the best that we could hope for after last night, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I suppose we could have got Chelsea because it's regionalised, but no, I'm quite happy. If you get drawn at home in these early rounds of the Cup, I'm quite happy with that, Dave, no problems.
Yeah. What did you think? I got home in time to see the draw. It was on about 10:30. Did you see it, Neil? First name out the hat in the southern end of the draw?
Well, I got home and I thought it'd be on Sky Sports News, but it wasn't, was it?
No, it was on the. It was after Burton Leicester game.
I mean, I didn't see it, but I saw it when it came up.
There you go.
And quite frankly, I agree with Ian. As long as it's at home.
As long as it's at home, and I it's not really a bold prediction, but with City playing at Hull on the Friday night, Friday the 25th of August, I'd hazard a guess and say it'll be home to the winner of that tie on Tuesday the 30th. Yes, so you know, at least another home game before the international break. Okay, so before the game, or after Saturday, we were rocked by the news that Tommy Conway is going to be out by 3 months. But for me, Nigel Pearson named a pretty strong side. Yeah, the key one was Roberts coming in at left back. And the four, we can talk about his individual performance in a moment. But you first, Neil, on the team. It didn't look that weak on paper at all, really. I mean, we went out there with a team to win it, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we spoke in a previous podcast about the team for Oxford. And I think we collectively, I think we got it pretty much bang on, didn't we? I think the only difference, of course, being Conway. Little did we realise after the game that he'd actually done his hamstrings in the game. In the Preston game itself, which kind of explains his flat performance for 20 minutes. He must have done it when he first came on. But what was really nice yesterday was to see Naismith back on the subs bench. And obviously we'll get to him during the game. But it was nice to have, you know, a few youngsters there and, you know, Naismith coming back.
Yeah. Ian, what did you think of the lineup? Yeah, Ian, what did you think of the lineup when you saw it there?
I think it was strong. I was surprised that he didn't give Arroyo a start in place of Rob Dickey, because we are down to two fit, experienced centre backs. I suppose you could say three now that Naismith's back. But I've said for a long time I prefer Cal in midfield, and he showed why last night. But yeah, I mean, I thought Roberts would start. I thought Andy King and Joe Williams would come in because they didn't start on Saturday. Jason Knight, I would have given another run as well because he didn't have a great game on Saturday. Mometi had to come in because that's I think that was a given. So it was about what we expected, barring Tommy Conway. And like Neil said, that the fact that he did his hamstring in the game, that explains his performance, because it was the worst I'd ever seen Tommy play. So that explains exactly why.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into the detail of the action. First goal on 15 minutes, Neil. City had quite a quiet start, and I would say that the goal was slightly against the run of play. Would you agree with me in that respect?
First 15 minutes, Dave, we were sloppy. There was a number of misplaced passes, particularly one from Roberts, strangely enough. They broke on us quite quickly. They certainly had two or three decent opportunities against us. We started a bit rusty. King looked rusty. Roberts, for all his individuality and stuff, a couple of misplaced passes.
I agree with that.
Tanner as well. Yeah, it wasn't the most inauspicious sort of start to the game. But then once we settled, then we moved forward.
Yeah. And that first goal on the quarter of an hour, Mometi and Roberts combining. I mean, Harry Cornick will be pleased that he tucked that one away, won't he? Yeah.
Well, I think the funny thing is that Harry Cornick basically made what's got to be termed the Sykes move, isn't it? I think in terms of that penalty spot, cross from the left, Sykes moves. God knows how many goals we scored last year. Pretty much, what is it, five out of seven Sykes goals were from that exact same sort of spot. And, you know, getting down the left wing, crossing it in. We still get nothing down the right. It would be interesting to see what, if Tanner ever got to the byline and crossed it in from the right-hand side, whether anybody be making those runs. But just standing on the penalty spot, isn't it? Just standing on, getting the bodies in the box.
It makes it look easy. Ian, I'll come to you for the equalising goal, which came 15 minutes later. And Oxford were well worth it at that point. Criticism by some in some quarters for Max O'Leary, because that header from Bowden, you know, I haven't seen a replay of that particular goal, but how did you see their equaliser? Sloppy defending, goalkeeping?
Not really. It was long diagonal ball. Bowden placed his header well across the goal. O'Leary shouldn't have come for that. He got criticised. He got pelters on Saturday for coming out to one. Now, that cross wasn't as far out, but it was a good high diagonal ball. And I'm wondering who it was. George Tanner would have been picking up Bowden in that position. And he should. I mean, Bowden's not the tallest man in the world.
No.
So perhaps George Tanner should attract more criticism than Max O'Leary. But it was one of those where he gets up, he puts the ball back where it's come from, so to speak. But he's got good height and a good angle on it across the goal. So, no, I didn't look at that goal and think, blimey, Max should have done a lot better with that.
Yeah. Ian, I'll stick with you for City's second goal, which came 5 minutes later. And that equaliser did seem to sort of stir them into action for a period which extended, obviously, well into the second half. But Mometi's cross deflected into the path of Knight, as Neil said earlier. You know, Johnny on the spot, you know, he can't do much about it. But Mometi, a more controlled game from him, I and others thought last night. Yeah, and he did well to get that cross in, didn't he?
Yeah, well, you've just described the goal, so I won't bother to describe it again. But in terms of Mometi, what we wanted from Anis is end product. It's all right doing, you know, it's a little bit like Ronaldo in the early days, you know, 17 step overs and then get a shot deflected behind, cross deflected behind for a corner. You know, you want that end product. You want good crosses. And he can cross the ball when he's particularly with his right foot. And last night, I think the combination with Roberts, that was a little bit of an eye-opener for me. So all the danger for us, more or less, was coming down the left-hand side. And that's exactly how the second half started as well.
Yeah.
So, great to see A, Mometi get his assist. B, great to see Jason Knight get his first competitive goal for City, and then closely followed by another one.
Yeah. Neil, Knight was playing in a more advanced role. I mean, he got a few like, oh, what have we signed here after Saturday's performance? But I thought it was a much better game from him. And, you know, is he that person that can play behind the strikers, you know, with a firm anchor in the middle behind him?
Yeah, can I make an observation, Dave, about their equaliser?
Go on.
There's the conversation about goalkeepers that we need to have at some time at the club, isn't there?
Yeah.
The cross comes in from deep. Max comes forward about 5 or 6 yards, then mm-hmm. realises that he isn't going to get anywhere near it and is then retreating backwards. He's not set. Good header by Bowden in the corner, but Max came initially for a ball that he was never going to get anywhere near to. Just a judgment issue. And obviously we'll get to his performance in the second half and a couple of other ones as well. It just leaves you that feeling with Max, unfortunately. You know, it's just... Anyway.
Yeah.
With dealing with Jason Knight, he actually, before his second goal, he had a one-on-one when we burst through. And he showed a decent amount of pace, although they had no pace in their back line at all last. And I don't want to get too carried away with last night, because that's an Oxford team that only stayed up on the last game of the season from League One. And the Championship is a completely different beast.
Yeah. Well, they had chances, Neil. They had chances.
Absolutely. I mean, we could have been behind
before we went in front.
They had 8 shots to our 6 in the first half.
Yeah.
Albeit we had 70% possession.
Yeah.
They had their chances. And that young lad up top, the 18-year-old, he was a physical presence. And he gave Dickey and Viner a game in the centre. And they had chances. It's just their overall quality wasn't there.
Yeah.
And, you know, although it was 5, it could have been 7-8. For us, it could have been 8-3 or something daft like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get too carried away. It was nice to give people minutes on the pitch. But like Nigel said in the post-match, you know, 5-1 doesn't really... The true reflection of the game is 5-1, you think, oh, we've dominated, we've done this, we've done... Yeah, we dominated to a point. But we were sloppy at other times as well.
Yeah, no, we were. The first half hour. And as you say, Knight got his second. Good cross from Roberts. Ian, the game's out of sight of 3-1. Ian, 52 minutes. Talk us through that Naki Wells goal, because he's, you know, a lot of responsibility is going to fall on his shoulders now. I personally don't think we should be even looking at signing a striker as an emergency, as some people say, so we need to bring somebody in. We can talk about loan market later, but Naki's been the model professional in terms of how he's dealing with youngsters. He signed a contract at reduced terms. He's 33-year-old. He's fit as a butcher's dog. And that was a good finish from him to make it 4-1, wasn't it?
It was an excellent finish. Took the ball around the goalkeeper, a lot of composure, and stuck it in the net. But that's what Naki does. And a good assist from Jason Knight, who could have stormed on and tried to get his hat trick.
Yeah. And then no more than 10 minutes later, Neil, Wells, a ball, somebody described similar to the one that Matty Taylor put in again. Was it you? You were saying that to me last night? Because
Similar to the one Matty Taylor put in for Corey Smith.
And there was... It's Naismith!
It was, yeah. Yeah, and my youngest who's there, who's a bit of a Man United fan as well as a season ticket holder, he's only 14. He just went, blimey, that was Matty Taylor to Corey Smith. That was Man United, wasn't it?
Yeah. That brought back nightmares for your son, I guess, seeing that then, from that point of view. 5-1 it was, and then, yeah, everybody started chanting, we want 6 with about... Well, in the 7 minutes of time added on, the closest we came to it was a long-distance shot from Tanner. But there was a triple substitution on the hour with Naismith coming on. Who else came on? Bell.
That was the fifth goal, Dave.
You what, sorry?
The fifth goal was a minute after Naismith came on. So we actually had, with the injury time, we had 40 minutes to get that 6th, and we didn't do it.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say, you know, how many games we've seen over the years where we go 5 and we think, oh, go 6, 7, or whatever, and it doesn't, and it sort of peters out somewhat a little bit, really. Yeah. There was a lot of substitutions.
There was, and as I say, that triple one just before goal number five, Sykes had come on for Cornick at half-time, and then Ephraim, is that the right pronunciation? Yeboah. Ephraim,
yeah.
And another, I mean, I looked up that Oxford player, Gatlin Odonka, who you said was quite lively up front. He's a Ghanaian. He was 16 when he made his appearance for Oxford. But last season, you know, he got two goals in 30 League One games. So, you know, and I said to you just before we started recording, just based on 20 minutes, a bit more than that, obviously with time added on, Yeboah looks another one from the academy that's going to cause problems, doesn't it?
It was a brave statement because there are other players that he could have played. You know, I'm not quite sure what Marley Francois, for instance, might be thinking.
Well, he played for the under-21s the day before.
Right. So the fact that Yeboah, did Yeboah play for the under-21s as well, Ian?
No.
So it's always in their mindset, Yeboah could have played for the under-21s and Francois could have been on the bench.
Yeah.
So they fast-tracked Yeboah. Yeboah last season, when he was 16, was playing for the under-21s. He skipped the under-18s and went pretty much straight up to the under-21s. He's old Bic, Bristol City Academy, in a city. Yeah. And my eldest, who, as you know, is at the SGS Academy, a lot of the Bic guys are there as well. A lot of them know him. And he got picked up by City. He's a bit of a late starter. Came into the academy at about 14, 15.
Yeah.
Absolutely rapid. Absolute. Well, you saw that last night, Dave, didn't you?
Yeah.
Very, very quick. And for a 17-year-old, very, very big, very strong with that. And the way... What impressed, and I'm sure what impressed Nigel last night, not so much going forward, you know, he looked a bit raw. He looked a little bit what he is, 17, going forward. But there were a couple of times he chased back and made some really good interceptions, particularly when they were 4-on-2. And it was quite funny that he, when they broke on us one time, they had 4-against-2, and he raced back from that right wing and won the ball back. And Rodriguez, who had come on, who's the Notts County player that they signed, he was a decent for Notts County last year. He argued so much with the ref about that tackle, he got a booking for dissent. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah. At the other end, he probably couldn't believe that the young guy's come across, taking him out. And he bought that physicality. Could he be a new Semenyo?
Well,
I don't know, but
so.
he brings a physicality
so,
up there.
When we talk about transfers, there was a few ripples of interest in certain quarters in Sam Bell as well. But there we go. Ian, last night, 9,600. Decent showing from Oxford. But that's not a bad crowd for a first-round cup tie 4 days after a home game, is it?
No, I'd have settled for that, particularly with the nature of the home game, which wasn't the best. So a few people that were borderline, it would have put them off going. But no, I thought it was absolutely fine.
Yeah. And Neil, just to sort of wrap up, excuse me, on the game, we didn't see much of Branigan. I knew his name. I knew he was playing for them, but he didn't stand out to me. Midfielder for Oxford. We've been linked with him a few times in recent years, haven't we? Over the last 12 months or so, yeah. Didn't feature for me. Did he for you?
No. No. I thought the lad that we... The number 39,
Odonka, that's the one I was just saying about.
Thank you. Odonka looked bright, although my eldest who was there thought he looked raw, which he did, you know, but he brought a certain physicality to their front line that we struggled with a little bit at times.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think they're going to struggle. They lost to Cambridge at the weekend, didn't they? Mm. And I think Oxford are going to struggle again there. Really.
Yeah,
what was strange last night is that obviously Sykes, Atkinson was talking to them and Dickey, all ex-Oxford players. So Sykes and Dickey went over to their fans at the end and Rob was down in the tunnel area talking to all the... I mean, they are a bit of a Bristol City feeder club, aren't they?
Absolutely. Just like we are for Bournemouth, I guess.
But, yeah, indeed.
But there we
yeah.
go. And just finally on the game, Neil, sticking with you... Ollie Yates, the referee, let a lot go, didn't he? There was a few tackles flying in. He booked five, two of ours, Yates, Roberts and Dickey, three of theirs. But it was a robust game at times, wasn't it?
Yeah, I quite liked the Dickey one, actually. That Odonka, he broke on us and he won a physical challenge and he was going in. And Dickey took one for the team and pulled him back.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not it was similar to the weekend's game in a way. There was a lot of challenges going in and I think they're letting a lot go compared to last season. Just maybe that's just my interpretation. Yeah, we're only two games in.
Yeah, 4 minutes in the first half and seven in the second, which is not out of the ordinary for us. Okay, Ian, the news broke about Alex Scott. Bournemouth have they come up with a dosh, Ian, or have we fudged it a little bit because we need the money for different reasons? What's your view?
Well, here's my conspiracy theory on this one, Dave. I think what's happened is somebody at Ashton Gate in the hierarchy has got extremely nervous when Scott got a knock in training, and they thought, hang on a minute. That could have been his ACL.
Yeah.
Could have been his hamstring. At the hamstring probability center, it could have well been his hamstring. And they thought, better off accepting 21 million than holding out for 25. Then all of a sudden we find that Alex Scott can't play.
Yeah.
Or the same thing happens to him as happened to Tommy.
Yeah.
Now, Scott is... For a young lad, particularly, who did attract a lot of, I'll call it physical attention, he didn't miss many games, and he's pretty robust for a 19-year-old, I have to say, because he's not the biggest kid in the world.
No.
So I think somebody thought, wait a minute, we could end up getting nothing here. Does something more serious, he's out for a long time, and then his value plummets.
Yeah.
So I think that might have been, and this is just me thinking things through and thinking, well, it seemed to happen quite quickly. I think the number quoted by the respected BBC journalist was Ian Dennis, was in excess of 20 million. And I thought that was a strange way of putting it, because in excess of 20 million could be 20 million and £1, or it could be 25 million. My guess is it's closer to about, I would say, 21 to 22 with £5 million worth of add-ons.
Yeah.
Now, that way, it could be quoted as up to 27 million. Now, I understand the club not wanting to put anything on the website until the medical's passed and the deal's done. It will probably be undisclosed. But it will come out at the other
end. It will come out the other end, Ian. It usually does, doesn't it?
It always does. So that would be my guess. Somewhere between 21 and 22 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
And then £5 million worth of add-ons.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's... Did any of us want to sell Scotty? No. And as long as the club make money available to Nigel Pearson and Brian Tinian to strengthen the squad, and it could be that they can bring some of the deals they were going to do in January forward, I think the fan base will accept it. We knew he was going eventually. And it, in terms of a transfer, it's better now than later in the window with us having absolutely no chance.
That's key.
And having these ongoing injury problems that we've still got five out. We still don't really know about Vyman. We don't think it's very serious, but ho-hum. McCrory, bacterial infection, God knows. Tommy, we know he's going to be out for about, well, the rumour is, he said himself he's going to be supporting from the sidelines for a while. The last time he did his hamstring, he was out. He missed 15 games.
Amidst all that injury woe, and with the good news was that Eamon Benaroos came through in a game. Neil, I said, Ian said, you know, maybe up to 22 million in cash plus add-ons. I think the key thing in any deal that we
it's not cash, Dave.
I know, you said that on Radio Bristol last night, Ian. It's a fee, right? And how it's paid in, you know, it's they're Bournemouth are a debtor of the club until the transfer fee is paid. Yeah. And whether you go out and spend in advance of money that you're owed, that's up to you.
It depends. It goes into the P&L, Dave. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
So you've got that money and the Semenyo money in our P&L, as far as I know. I don't know when the cut-off
because Semenyo money is in a different year because the club's financial year is May.
Right, okay. But yeah, one so way or the other, we've got an extra 20 million plus
in this year. Yeah.
Gone into the P&L. So, yeah. And that makes a difference. All right, Pearson saying, well, we're up to our wage budget. Yeah, but you've just got 20 million quid extra in your
income. Well, I'll come back on that in a minute about wage budget, because we were talking about that just beforehand. Neil, the key thing in this deal for me, I think we got decent money. And Ian said, you know, maybe there was a few panics. We said on this podcast, you know, his value, because he's got 1 year. If he didn't go, he'd have 1 year less if he went next summer. He might have a storming season and somebody might have bought him in January. But the key for me is what the sell-on is. Yes. You know, and do you think maybe we've taken less than the don't come to the table unless you've got 25 million as a main thing?
I think that 25 million was kind of supposed by a lot of people. I don't think the club actually ever came out and actually officially said that. I think Nige kind of alluded to 25 million, or and then in the preseason he said he's been so good in the preseason, maybe he should be talking about 30 million. Ultimately, this deal, if it goes through, is now done in such a way that it's acceptable to the club.
Yeah.
So whether we've been arguing semantics over the way that deal itself is money up front based on appearances, based on goals, based on this, based on whatever, I would imagine that we would have pushed quite hard to get a very high sell on.
Yeah.
Because he's that type of player. And for someone like Bournemouth, you know, forking out X amount and then that sell on top, that's a big amount for them. And you know, they are carrying a risk with a 19-year-old. Well, he's 20 next month, isn't he? I think
he is 20 later this month.
Yeah. And as Ian says, you know, that the risk is all with them. I mean, you look at the Semenyo deal, and I was reading some of the Bournemouth journos, and that shin injury that has ruled him out, and he's had another operation. By all accounts, they didn't do particularly great due diligence on his medical, because I remember he had that shin injury from Ghana, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
And yes, he did. And he went off and he had an operation and then he missed the start of our season. And then,
yes, he did.
Then he came back and all the rest of it. And it's those type things, you know, that the shins, Jay De Silva was never the same player after the shin injuries he had.
No.
And those type of things in medicals, I don't think there's going to be a similar
type. Well, let's look at it this way. Semenyo's got to kick on a bit for us to get any added value with him. And how many years?
I think the Semenyo thing, Dave, I think he would have, part of it would have been Bournemouth staying in the Premier League last year.
Yeah, it was, Neil. That was part
of the add-on. So we've had that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, injuries apart, Scott gone for 20 million. He could quite easily go after maybe 2 years into his contract there and getting games, get playing for the England under 21s, the next level up from where he's at. In 2 years' time, he could quite easily be a £40 million player. And to get 20% of an incremental value of, say, 20 million, you know, it's worth another
4 million.
Call it another 3 or 4 million. Yeah. Which would be nice to come to us, because we've had no benefit from sell-ons, no benefit worthy of the name since Bolasie. I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I, Ian? Because that was a bolt out of the blue. But we've not, you know, there's been no Brownhill move, no Lloyd Kelly move. We've not done, never mind the players that have gone out the door for nothing. Yeah.
No Webster as well. Webster, Brownhill and Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that ship has passed on. Webster going for much more now, yeah, because he's yeah, if he doesn't do it, well, he's not going to move this transfer window, I wouldn't have thought. But there we go. Ian, Nigel seemed a little bit terse when he was questioned about it last night, and you've just said, you know, he's going to want to see some of that money. So how much do you think he would be given? What can City fans expect in your...
I would think, my guess is 5 million over the next two windows. Right. And the reason I say that is I don't think that deal would be... The structure of the payment, and this was the problem, as I understand it, with what Wolves were trying to say. They wanted to pay for the player over 4 years and this, that, and the other, and if this and if that, and it was a non-starter. So I don't think that deal will be structured over anything more than 2 years.
Yeah.
And I think there'll be a debt. To make it simple numbers, let's call it 22 million. So it'd be 11 million down payment and then 11 million over the next 12 months.
Mm.
Now, that means that you could then say, all right, we'll put 5 million. Nigel can have 5 million. You can use it for wages. You can use it for loans. You can use it for permanent signings, which we know he prefers. But I think there's some gems to be had in the loan market. I'm not talking about half a dozen. I'm talking about one or two.
Yeah.
We know we've got no experience cover at centre-back, although Cal Naismith being back helps. I still think his best position's in midfield next to Matty James if we're going to play 4-2-3-1. Mm. So I think that's realistically, let's put it this way, I can't see him getting any more than that. But that should be enough. If you look at what he spent on Dickey, McCrory, Roberts,
Knight,
that we would have spent about 2 million.
Three.
I would say we'll call it 5 million.
No.
So he should be able to get at least a couple of really good players.
Yeah. Yeah.
In for that kind of money. Now, if it's loans, you might be able to get, I'm spitballing here, but you might be able to get two in the door permanently, plus a couple of loans. Then you might only need the loans up until Christmas, because hopefully by then Rob Atkinson will come
back. And Tommy will be back in contention.
And Tommy will be back as well. So it's just about being sensible and saying, right, we are where we are. I mean, Pearson seemed cheesed off last night. Well, you know, all I've had is a phone call telling me that we've accepted a bid and he's down there having a medical. So I can't add anything more to that. Then he added, well, it's not going to be as easy. I wanted to keep him. We're better off keeping him. Because do you remember that time he had a bit of a pop? He called the club's transfer strategy before he was here bonkers.
Yes, he did.
And about 2 days before, John Lansdowne had been going on about the financial structure and this, that, and the other. And Pearson said, well, it's basically bonkers. You sell your best players every year.
Well, that's why I don't think there's any love lost between the hierarchy and Nigel. Yeah,
there's no relationship between Steve Lansdowne like there was between Steve Lansdowne and Lee Johnson. Steve still rings Lee Johnson and has a chat with him. I can't see him doing that with Nigel Pearson.
No, because he's told him a few hard truths. Neil, let me ask you about the money. I mean, Ian said 5 million, including wages, and Nigel's already alluded to the fact that, you know, well, we got to take wages into account.
No, I didn't say including wages, Dave. I said 5 million could be utilised in any way. It could be
which could include wages. The point I was going to make, Neil, is that up until 2 weeks ago, Masengo and Callas could have both accepted the contracts that they were offered. So the budget for their way, if you like, the 23-24 season budget would include contracts issued and not signed, right? And if you look at Callas taking a pay cut to half his money that he was on before, let's ignore Masengo, half of Callas's contract, I would imagine, is the equivalent of two decent championship weekly wages in a post-COVID world. So I don't buy the wage thing being an issue, right? But do you agree with Ian that the 5 million is, it would be nice for him to spend that? And if so, on what?
Well, strangely enough, I posted on OTIB the other day that when we were walking back to Long Ashton Park and Ride, Callas was walking directly behind me. So he obviously walked down and then he walked on, and as we drove past him, he was walking into Long Ashton. So that's obviously where he lives. He's still in the area. I don't see the wage structure. They've put in place a wage structure, and they kind of want to stick to that structure as much as possible. But we have got a number of players that we need to tie down. So I think we need to tie down Tommy Conway. We need to tie down Cal Pring. Viner's had a strong start to the season. He's rejected the current offer. James is out of contract at the end of the season. Williams is out of contract at the end of the season.
Viman's out of contract. Yeah.
Viman's out of contract at the end of the season. So the club itself, yes, last season, or the last, not last season, the season before, had a turnover of 26 million. 20 million, putting that end to it, is a sizable chunk of money. The difficulty you have from a negotiating point of view is that every single club is going to have seen that. So you go out there and you start negotiating with any League One, League Two club, whatever like that, and you say, well, we see your player as, you know, a million. They go, well, you just had the Scott money. So you're not kind of in the strongest negotiating position to get.
I have to say, bargains. Though, I've got to disagree to that with a point, because if you're sat there as a League One club and you ain't got much money, and okay, the one who plays hardball all the time is Darren McAntony at Peterborough. But if you're a club like, I was going to say Bristol Rovers, but, you know, although they've got so-called new investment now, but if we went along to a club and we said a million, they said, you've got Scott money, we want two, right? Then, you know, walking away from a million, that's quite a, it's a bit like us with Scott. We wanted 25, but maybe we accepted 21, 22, because a bird in the hand is better than not.
But I think, David, in relation to that, that Pearson has always said he will get players in, but they have to be better than what are already at the club. And that is his issue with loans. He's not a Lee Johnson, let's get two or three clubs in, you know, two or three players for every single position. They have to be better than what we already have at the club.
Yeah.
If you're talking about young players coming through, you know, yeah, we dipped into it a little bit with Mometi based on potential there. But what you don't want to do is stifle the young players coming through the academy. So do you go to a Premier League club and get an 18, 19-year-old in on loan? Well, no, because you've got people like, I'm going to have a difficulty with this name again, Areo. At the back, maybe, or whatever. Raphael, we'll just call him Raphael. And, you know, where I think we're struggling a little bit from the academy-wise is I don't see the centre midfielders coming through, or at least the centre midfielders from last season, like Omar Taylor-Clark, he might be going out on loan somewhere. Kadj is already gone. I can see a striker coming in.
Ian, sorry, Neil, a lone striker, if there's someone really special, because, you know, you bring in a lone defender and he isn't going to be the difference between staying playoffs or not getting to the playoffs. You bring in a Tammy Abraham, and if we'd have had a better team behind him, he scored prolific, yeah? And if you could bring in a striker that was going to be Tammy Abraham standard, that is the advocacy for bringing in a lone player, isn't it?
But we're, well, if you, hang we, on, we, if don't, you remember, we don't have to...
Ian, go on, what are you going to say?
If you remember Remember when we signed Sean Taylor that season, the difference he made to our team? So a defender can make a difference. And in Tammy, you talk about loan signings. If we hadn't have had Tammy Abraham that season, we'd have been relegated.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was a different scenario. His goals kept us in the division, yeah? But he had a prolific record coming it to us, albeit at lower level, and he continued that record. And look at his career ever since.
What would be interesting to me, Dave, if we're talking about the team as it stands at the moment, we've got the goalkeeper issue that we maybe touch on another time, looking at the time.
Yeah.
The right back, depending on McCrory, God knows what the illness is, but he wasn't down on the sidelines last night alongside all the injured players in front of us in the Lower Lansdowne. He hasn't been around the club at all. So whatever bacteria, if that's glandular fever or whatever, that takes it out. Then you're left with Tanner at right back. And he brought McCrory in to be that right back.
Absolutely. Because he,
so you, if you're looking at loans or depending on when people are back, I think we're short at goalkeeper. I think we're short at right back at the moment. And because of Conway's injury, I think we're short up top. There's no way you could play Wells day in, day out as the nine in every game at 33. What happens if he picks up an injury or strain? And well, last night, he moved Bell into the number nine, and Bell isn't a number nine playing down the centre. And I don't think Cornick is either. So then you really don't have any player that can actually play in that centre other than Wells and Conway.
Okay. All right. I mean, look, Alex is, we think he's gone, unless he fails a medical. We move on to a life after Scott. Good luck to the lad, and we'll all watch his progress with interest. As I say, the gloom after Preston clearly lifted by that win last night against Oxford, but the juggernaut rolls on to South London, South East London at the weekend with a trip to the New Den and Millwall, who got themselves a 1-0 win away at much fancied Middlesbrough at the weekend. Ian, the boys will go in to that Millwall game boosted, and I would imagine there'll be one or two team changes for that one coming up. What would you see the lineup looking like at the weekend?
Well, my lineup will be completely different to Pearson, because after Saturday, I go to Millwall and play 4-5-1 because I played Pring and Roberts on that left hand side. You saw the damage that Roberts did last night in a man of the match performance. And he will get lots of assists. So I'd play a 4-5-1. And that also enables you to have three narrow in midfield, so we don't get overrun in midfield again.
Yeah.
But I mean, coming back to what Neil was saying, I think we need four players. Now, however we get them, whether they're loans, perms or whatever, and that's a goalkeeper, a left centre back, a creative central midfielder to replace Scott. You're never going to replace him completely. And a centre forward who's different from the ones we got. In other words, what used to be called a target man, but certainly somebody who can make the ball stick up front and play other players in. Now, we haven't got that player. So Arsenal have just signed... Arsenal have just signed a player. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah. Swansea have just signed a player from Arsenal called Charlie Patino, who is, it'll be a loan signing, but he looks more like Alex Scott than Alex Scott. He's an attacking midfielder, creative, and that's a player that we were also linked with. So I think that's the nature of what we've got to do between now and the end of the window, particularly, as Neil mentioned, with the ongoing injuries we've got. You know, Rob Atkinson, Pearson said, might not be back until January. I think it'd be quicker than that, hopefully. I think if providing he doesn't have any hiccups Eamon Benaroos will be back mid to late September. So that's those two. Andy Weidman, we don't know about. Ross McCrory, we don't know about. So we need to crack on with that, because Millwall are going to be a completely different kettle of fish. And I know people say, well, they got 4-0 by Reading, but they made six changes, one positional and five personnel changes from that game, from the Middlesbrough game. For example, Joe Bryan did play for them. So we just need to be a bit sensible. Yes, we beat Oxford 5-1, but they aren't very good. Whilst it was good for confidence, we'll need to put together a stronger and better team. I'd start Naismith. I'd start Matty James as well. But I would play, and I'd start Sykes on the right. And I would play 4-5-1, go really solid and hit them on the breakup there.
Interesting. Because I say the game was played on a Wednesday, I don't think there's going to be any transfer activity before the weekend. I mean, Ian said about playing Roberts and Pring. And would you see that as being Roberts in front of Pring or Pring in front? I mean, they can alternate down that side, can't they?
They can. The link-up he had with Mometi was good, but that was a demonstration of the quality of Roberts, actually. The quality of him on that third goal, when the run that he made and the way he interacts and pushes on. I saw him at Cheltenham. I opened a topic on OTIB on him at after the Cheltenham game. He's very one-footed. I'm not sure very left-footed. I don't think I've seen a player so left-footed since perhaps probably Tin Man back in the days. But to have him in the team, I'm not sure about Naismith starting. They're kind of easing him back in. He was out injured at the end of last season. He's obviously got these calf issues, and he gave him half an hour last night, wasn't it? Just a little bit longer. Came on 61st minute, I think, last night. So that is a tough physical game in a championship. What you wouldn't want to do is bring him on and he breaks down after 15, 20 minutes. So I think it'll be the same. It'll be Williams, James and Knight, I would say, in the centre. But it's interesting what Ian said about the 4-5-1.
I'd agree with you on that. I'd agree with you on that midfield three, Williams, James and Knight. And then you could say to James, run yourself into the ground for an hour and you can bring King on for him or what have you. We've got options. And I'd agree with you. Bringing Naismith on is better than starting him, because what you don't want to do is him start, break down. Now, he could come on after with half an hour to go and break down with 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to draw conclusions in a way. I mean, Cornick took his goal well last night and you go, okay. This was a League One side we were playing last night, and a struggling League One side we were playing last night. And we were clinical. Yeah, we did the job, and we got the result, and that's great. But
that's what we did in all of our pre-season friendlies. They weren't testing. I mean, this is the thing. Getting back to what both you guys have said about transfers, they've got to be players better than what we've got. And we're talking about transfers in the main. Just to backtrack on that, and then I need to wrap this up. But just to backtrack on those transfers coming in and being better than what we've got. And you know, if you do the loan market, you've got the flexibility, because you could say, well, we'll loan them to the end of January. Then come January, our players are back, if they're better than what we've got. But if their players are better than what we've got and they're permanent signings, which is Nigel's preference, right, you're not going to get a player that's better than what we've got, right, for less, in my opinion, than £2 million. Yeah. So I would much sooner persevere with Araya, maybe, when Atkinson comes back. Because if you're saying we need cover on that left side, right, you know, Atkinson, he's got to be better than Rob Atkinson, unless he's a lone player. Yeah. And that's the conundrum, isn't it? You know, you go out, you've got some money to spend, but we get players better. And the evidence there, as Ian said, was in the players that we did pay money for, you know, which is that McCrory wasn't cheap and Knight wasn't cheap. And they're at that 2 million bracket when in the past, for the past few years, post Ashton, we've been spending about £1 million to get a player that's better than what we got is going to cost us 2 million. Yeah. And we talk about goalkeeper as well. Save that for another day. But, you know,
I think right back. I mean, I think we're lopsided as a team at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Tanner in a way, but he gets a nosebleed if he goes past halfway. And I don't think his link. I don't think his link up is great. I think he needs to improve that. He needs to improve it.
Yeah,
He gets to the halfway line, Dave, and his general MO is to pass the ball back.
Yeah,
we lose inertia on the right hand side. Yeah. If you had a decent right back,
we've got one, but he's out with a bacterial infection, so there's no point in going out there.
Well, I haven't seen him. I can't say whether or not he's decent or not.
No, because I haven't seen him. Based on money that he cost us, he's got to be better than George Tanner. That's what we're saying.
Well, to be honest, David, he's been in the Scottish Prem. Who knows? Yeah. Scottish Prem in the Championship. Championship is a very, very hard competitive league.
Neil, at the end of the day, if you're worried about right back, right, you can just move everybody across one, because you can put Viner at right back. Dicky right of centre, Cam Pring can come in and play alongside.
Dave, why are we shoehorning players into positions? It's not their best position.
I agree.
You know, you've got Viner who's
out. We were just talking about covering. Neil was just saying Tanner is the weak link in the team.
I don't think he's necessarily a weak link. I think George Tanner is a right back. I don't think he's brilliant going forward, but bearing in mind, he couldn't go forward against Preston because we never had the ball in midfield.
Yeah.
So if he went forward, all that's going to happen is they're going to play the ball in where he would have been, and Preston are going to be away. So you can't blame, because Cam Pring was exactly the same as George Tanner on Saturday. He couldn't get up the pitch either. Struggled badly. But I hate this. It's like we're having a conversation with Gary Ours. Let's have some specialists. Let's not say, oh, well, he can play left centre-back, because I'll tell you, that's exactly what will happen if Dickie gets injured. He'll play Roberts at left-back and he'll play Campering at left centre-back.
If that happens whilst Atco's out. All right, guys.
Possibly until January.
Yeah. So
we will get other injuries in the meantime. This is why I'm saying, I've been saying right from the end of last season, the squad isn't strong enough or deep enough to cope with the injuries. If you can magically, and this is impossible, stop everybody from getting injuries, and there is a terrible predilection in our club for people to get hamstring injuries when they come in. George Tanner had two.
Yeah.
Tommy's had two. Andy King's had two.
Joe Williams
has had two, three, four. I lost count.
He is the most common injury in football, though.
Well, hamstring injuries are very common these days, particularly in young people. Now, it's 15 times more likely that a young person will get a hamstring injury. When I'm saying young, I'm talking 15, 16, even younger than it was 20 years ago. And the surgeon, there's a really good program on Sky that is on their catch-up service or whatever it's called, Watch Again. If you go in there, there's a program about how prevalent they are. And they asked the surgeon, and he said, one of the biggest things we can do is for people to warm up a lot better than they do. And his view was, there's a lot more competitive football for young people than there used to be, proper competitive football. And you can see it down the city ground. We got kids down there 8 years old. And he said and I was amazed with it. And sorry, it wasn't hamstrings, it was ACLs. You're 15 times more likely to do your ACL than you were 20 years ago, young people. And that's boys and girls. So,
interesting. You know,
it needs looking at, and our injury situation needs looking at. I'm not trying to blame people and say, oh, the medical staff are incompetent, but we went to a fitness and conditioning camp in Austria, and before last night, Naismith ain't kicked a ball in anger since, and McCrory still hasn't. Now, I know you can pick up a bacterial infection anywhere. Strangely enough, my dog had a very serious one about 2 months ago, he had E. coli. Now, you know, that'll kill a dog, that'll kill a person if you don't get it treated. But luckily, you can treat it with antibiotics.
There you go. All right, so guys.
Let's hope the bloke's all right.
Well, let's hope he is, yeah, because that's one of the mysteries at the moment is how long is he going to be out for? Because he was one of our hallmark signings. Okay. Wrap it up for today. We'll be recording our Millwall review probably on the Zoom platform on Saturday at 6 o'clock. And then, so that'll be good to hear how we get on. And, you know, I mean, I take a point at Millwall now, 2 points in the opening two games and into the second round of the Caribou Cup would be half decent. But Ian and Neil, thanks for your contributions today. And the gang of you that have tuned in to listen live and hear about how Ian's dog got E. coli, I'll tell you about how I'm giving my Labrador supplements to ease his joints in our next episode. Call it animal.
You'd rather have that than E. coli. I'm not going to draw you any pictures.
Yeah. All right. All the best, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Life, I've been unlucky. Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.